Hello, I'm Professor Bob Hewish from the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. You're listening to GDP, the Global Development Primer, the podcast dedicated to all issues in international development studies. Follow me on Twitter at Professor Hewish. Thanks again for tuning in to GDP, the Global Development Primer podcast. And this week, very happy to have Anir Chowdhury with us. He's a policy advisor of the A2I program of the ICT division and the cabinet division of the government of Bangladesh, which is supported by the UNDP. Now, in this capacity, he leads the formation of a whole of society innovation ecosystem in Bangladesh through massive technology deployment, extensive capacity development, integrated policy formation, and whole of government institutional reform, and an innovation fund. His work on innovation in public service has developed interesting and replicable models of service delivery decentralization, public-private partnerships, and transformation of a traditional bureaucracy into a forward-looking, citizen-centric service provider. He's a regular speaker in international conferences on public service innovation and reform, digital financial inclusion, data-driven policymaking, civil registration and digital identity management, SDGs, youth and community empowerment, educational transformation, public-private partnerships, and South-South cooperation. He regularly writes on reputed national and international blogs, journals, and publications, and we're very happy to have him join us this week on GDP to talk about the growing problem of the digital divide. Anir, welcome to GDP.
Thank you very much, Bob. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, we really do appreciate your time joining us this week. And you're working on some very interesting projects about the digital divide. Could you just tell our listeners what exactly is the digital divide?
Bob, a very important question in today's world. So when we look at the world today, it's largely digital. I mean, the systems and software and our devices in our hands tell us which movies to see, which person to befriend, even sometimes which person to date or marry. So algorithms, machines, software, they decide. If you look at the developing world, it's not very different. I mean, if you look at Facebook as a country, over 2 billion people, much of that from the developing countries. In Bangladesh, if you look at it, in the last decade or so, the number of people using Facebook has become astronomically high. People may not understand what internet is, but they'll know what Facebook is. So that's where we have the digital world that has gone. Now, what is the divide? The divide happens when the traditionally marginalized, the traditionally excluded, even become more excluded because of digital inclusion. So typically we're saying that digital inclusion is a level playing field. So it levels the playing field. So students who don't have access to education can actually access education using online systems. Patients who don't have access to the regular healthcare can actually access healthcare through online. But what is the reality? What we saw during COVID, when overnight everything went from mostly physical to all digital, so we're talking about maybe 1% digital to 100% digital overnight, we saw the gaps. We saw that when we moved our education to online, because all schools were closed for 18 months in Bangladesh, we saw that we were only able to serve about 20% of our primary school students because they only had access to the internet. We were able to serve maybe about 40% of our secondary school students. In terms of healthcare, everything became online or on the phone. And we again saw that people who did not have access were not able to access the healthcare services. So that's the reality. So when we talk about digital divide, there are typically two things that come up. One is the connectivity. The different examples that I talked about really have to do with connectivity. Of the people in the world, about one-third, 2.6 billion people are not on the internet right now. So they are completely excluded because they don't have access to the internet. And they don't have access to, because they don't have access to the internet, they don't have access to online services. So since more and more services are becoming online, that means they are becoming more and more excluded. The second thing that we talk about in digital divide is the skills, whether people have the right skills to operate the devices and access the services that are online. And this is where interesting data actually comes up. In terms of digital skills, we can divide that into digital literacy and digital proficiency. Now, in terms of literacy, that may be quite high. In terms of proficiency, which is what you would need to actually access healthcare services or education services or financial services, you need some level of digital skills. So that's where the number is quite low. Even when literacy is high, digital literacy is high, skills are low. So we see that as a major problem. And that is being worsened by the advent of AI. And there are major reports that are coming up from prominent research organizations that are saying that we will lose about 300 million jobs in the next few years because of AI, which will take over these jobs. They'll actually do it as well as human beings. But beyond connectivity and skill, there is one aspect that we don't talk about much at all. And that is the nuanced aspect of how digital services are designed for the traditionally excluded, such as the women, the rural poor, persons with disability, the elderly, the indigenous population. So sometimes when we design services in a digital manner, we actually don't keep their design preferences in mind or their locations in mind. So that's an aspect of digital divide that we don't discuss. We discuss mostly connectivity. We discuss skills somewhat, but we don't discuss the nuances of digital design. And that's where we actually are focusing on. That's something that we are trying to bring up in our discussion.
Well, this is just, you know, I think this is a profoundly shocking statistic that you just shared here. And for most people who are, you know, hearing this through one of the major podcast platforms, it might even be more shocking to think that there are 2.6 billion people without reliable access to data, I suppose, and access to internet when, when there's just, there's such another half of the world where we're literally connected to it all day long through smart devices and everything else. And, you know, I'm just wondering.
But think of internet as oxygen, right? I mean, you're accessing all your services through the internet without even thinking about it in the developed world. And also in the cities of the developing world, but the rural areas, the suburban areas are not connected in a reliable manner.
And are there other, there's got to be other issues involved here. I'm thinking like with, you know, where is data the most, or internet as being the most expensive or the most excluded? Like, are we talking landlocked countries, conflict zones, small islands? Like where geographically are we looking for this?
Obviously, the islands, it's very difficult to commercially provide in a very viable manner, commercially viable manner, connectivity at an affordable cost. There are metrics which look at GDP per capita and connectivity costs, data costs.
Right.
And if you look at data costs in some of these poor countries and compare them with their GDP per capita, you'll see that substantial part of GDP per capita would go into paying for data, which is the lifeline, but then it's not affordable for those people. And they may not have the skills. And then also the providers who are creating those digital services are not designing for the persons with disability who are the most excluded, are not designing for women who are quite excluded, are not designing for elderly, and so on and so forth. So the design issue is also very important, that we design for the people that are like us. The designers are able-bodied. The designers are mostly male. The designers are mostly Western or Northern. They belong to Western or Northern countries. So what happens to the people, predominantly large number of people who use it but are not creating those?
Yeah, that's the, and that gender issue is huge. One article I was looking at earlier on this topic, you see that kind of globally, men tend to have more access to internet than women
Absolutely.
Do.
And that's 264 million more men use internet than women.
There you go.
And
so
yet there are equal number of men and women in the world.
And I guess the other factor here that you sort of hit on with AI, but more to the point with digital literacy, this is massive, because you know when you've got folks who are, as you say, maybe not really familiar with the internet, but they know what Facebook is. You know, we see in many parts of the world where even, as I say in Spanish, la tercera edad, the people who are aging, they are connected too, and they often can fall victims for misinformation or scams or something like this. And I'm thinking, if we're seeing a population of 2.6 billion, a big gender divide, more restrictions on data in remote areas or conflict areas, then that's ripe for the ability for corruption and false influence over people, I'm guessing, if they are eventually connected.
Absolutely, absolutely. So people who are connected can actually wield much more influence on society, and vice versa. People who are more influenced have connectivity. So when we talk about digital divide, we're also looking at the other forms of divide that are getting exacerbated because of digital divide. So economic divide is getting worse because of digital divide, social divide, education divide, gender divide. So these are all getting rural and urban divide. About 35% of the rural population use the internet, as opposed to 55% in urban areas. So these are all large divides that we're talking about. And that's what we're trying to address by raising awareness, but not just raising awareness, by creating collaborative action across nations and across developing agencies and also private sector.
Okay, so with that, you have a project called the Equality Center. What's the story with it?
We did a research report in the last 1 year, and that was triggered by COVID. So we prided ourselves before COVID in Bangladesh that we had been taking so many citizen-centered and centered on excluded population, initiatives centered on excluded population, that we prided ourselves saying that we don't have much digital divide in Bangladesh. But COVID proved us very wrong. As I said, we saw that online education was only accessible to a fraction of our students, 45 million students only, maybe a fourth to half of them were able to access online education reliably. Patients, again, similar things, a very small fraction were able to access healthcare reliably. Financial inclusion was better because we actually did not focus on the internet. We focused on non-internet access mechanisms, and that made sure that we don't have a lot of digital divide for financial inclusion. So that research allowed us a deep look at connectivity issues, affordability issues, digital literacy and skills issues, but also those design considerations that I talk about. That gave us a look at what we now call adverse digital incorporation. And this was a concept that was primarily promoted by Dr. Amartya Sen almost 20 years ago. And Richard Hicks at Manchester University in the UK also talked about it recently. The idea is that when you incorporate something digitally, you are creating access, you are actually leveling the playing field, but you're also potentially widening the divide if you're not doing it right. So I talked about health education as two examples, but also let's say in land services. In Bangladesh, land is scarce. We have a large population of 170 plus billion people in the size of a country that fits into Iowa as a state in the US. So very jam-packed. So land is scarce and land is expensive and land is very valuable. So to get a copy of certified land record, you'd have to go to a land office, pay huge bribes, go there multiple times to get a certified copy of land record. So we actually digitized it, and that eased the process that brought the corruption down significantly. But then we thought, why not make land records on blockchain? Because that's immutable, that is highly secure, and that would give the right ownership to the right people at the right time. But we saw that when we are going from analog to digital, so you have analog paper-based land records, and you're going to digital land records on blockchain, which is immutable. So that's when the biggest corruption happens. So the land grabbers, who are typically influential in society as organizations or individuals, that can influence that decision of who gets to claim ownership of that land, because there is dispute often. So that's when the biggest corruption happens, at the point of taking analog paper-based land records into digital blockchain-based land records. So that's the adverse digital incorporation that could potentially happen unless we safeguard against it and we design for the excluded. You talked about the misinformation and disinformation. That's also adverse digital incorporation, the way these information social media systems that are emerging, that are influencing our decisions for day-to-day to even large policy decisions, right? So Equality Center focuses on research, focuses on supporting Bangladesh and other LDCs in terms of these guardrails that we need to put in place, the right types of technologies that we need to actually develop and mature. And also, we also launched, as part of the Equality Center, a small fund to support other LDCs, other least developed countries, because in Bangladesh, we were an LDC for a very long time, for 50 years. Just recently, we became a lower middle-income country with an aspiration to become a high-income country the next 20 years or so. So we are on a very high growth trajectory financially. And we want to make sure that other countries with such aspiration, other LDCs, we're able to support with technology and with some seed funding. So that's the focus of the Equality Center. Research to understand, technology to solve problems, and financing to actually fund those solutions.
Fascinating. And I guess with that, there's also a concept of frugal innovation that gets thrown into the mix. Could you explain what that is as well?
Frugal innovation. Now, there is a book by Professor Jaideep Prabhu from Judd School of Business at Cambridge, who wrote a book that's called Frugal Innovation. And he talks about different stories, primarily from developing countries, and some stories are from India, that how we don't throw away a jar containing, let's say, jam. So typically in the Western countries, we would use the jam, put it on bread. When it's empty, you throw it away. In a developing nation, that jar is reused for storing seeds or anything else, maybe other spices or whatever. So that's just a very simple example of frugal innovation, where we reuse, recycle, because that's the way we live. Other types of frugal innovation would be technology developed. So there is this refrigerator developed in a rural environment in a developing country, where it's developed with an earthen material, not with the plastics and the porcelain that you see in Western countries. And it actually ran without electricity with a water circulation system. So that's also a frugal innovation. So there are numerous examples of innovations that support lives, that make living much better, using a fraction of the cost you would see in commercial manufacturing in Western and other countries. And these frugal innovations are the ones that are going to be most useful through a south-to-south cooperation mechanism. So a southern country supporting another southern country because that frugal innovation makes sense. But then these frugal innovations are not marketed properly because there is no marketing machine or marketing dollar behind it. So how do you actually take these frugal innovations and make these available and applicable to larger contexts in the developing nation? So that's another thing that we're also looking at through the frugal innovation approach. All the technologies that we have developed in Bangladesh to transform the country digitally in the last decade and a half. When we started, we had less than 1% internet penetration. Now we have about 70% internet penetration. We had about $650 per capita income when we started. Now it's about 3,000. So we quadrupled, more than quadrupled. And that went hand in hand. And a lot of those was possible because we focused on developing our systems, technologies, both software and hardware, in a very frugal manner that's cost-effective and affordable for the population that we are targeting.
Fantastic. And this is, again, it's at the heart of sustainable development goals. Like this is something that's on deck for needing this sort of attention.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the sustainable development goals, the SDGs, as we call them, for 2030, the global mandate, couple of weeks, we went through the UN General Assembly in New York. I'm actually speaking from New York. I attended the assembly. And one of the things that kept coming up in the Secretary General's speech and the leaders, hundreds of leaders that came from different countries, heads of states and governments, ministers, corporate leaders, NGO leaders, they all talked about how we are off track, significantly off track, to achieve the SDGs. So that's where the frugal innovation is a must. Apply to any of the 17 goals in SDGs, applying that lens of frugal innovation, making sure that things are done in a frugal, sustainable manner, not harming the environment, making lives better for the people at the same time, is at the heart of achieving the SDGs in a cost-effective and probabilistic, I would say, deterministic manner. Right now, it's in a probability of not achieving those, but we can actually become much more deterministic if we focus on frugal innovation.
Well, let's hope that we do, because again, back to the original statistic that you gave, with almost a third of humanity without internet. This isn't just, as you very well put, it's not just luxury. I mean, this is now becoming a fundamental dynamic of the human condition, where having access to internet, to data, is something that can prevent manipulation. And goodness, there's certainly enough of it out there on the internet as is, that we want to make sure that those who have yet to be connected and have yet to develop digital literacy skills aren't in any way manipulated by it down the road, I hope.
Absolutely. You have it right on the head.
Well, Anir, thank you so much for joining us this week on GDP. And I am absolutely convinced that we will want to hear more about how some of these frugal innovation ideas are going to unfold, and hopefully that more people can tune in and be more aware and help support these sorts of innovations for a world that is deeply digitally divided. So thank you very much indeed for joining us today on GDP.
Thank you so much, Bob, for having me. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. And hopefully your call to action to your viewers will turn heads, and we'll see a lot more collaboration on frugal innovation, achieving the SDGs, and also closing the digital divide. Thank you very much.